Hey, it's Bill Simmons. Did you know I've had my podcast for 15 years? Do you know that it is the most downloaded sports podcast of all time? Did you know I have guests from the sports world, from the culture world, people who work for The Ringer, people outside The Ringer, celebrities, experts, you name it. It's on my podcast 3 times a week, late Sunday night, late Tuesday night, late Thursday night, the Bill Simmons podcast. Check it out on Spotify. This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side.
I'm so glad I hit record.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Righty's House on Ringer FC. Hope you're all safe and well. Today we're going to talk about Lyon's fantastic win over Barcelona in the Women's Champions League final. Then we're going to move on to some more from the Premier League final day. And we'll also chat Leeds, Burnley, Brighton, Brentford and more. And my guests are Mayowa Quadri and Mr. Carl Anker. How are we doing, fellas?
Good, it's been a while.
It's been a minute.
It has.
That's
too
what
long,
I'm saying now.
I'm good.
I'm taking that from Mayowa. It's been a minute, man. Too long. Carl, what can I say? How's your head this morning, bro?
My head's a little sore. I can't lie. I got in about 2 o'clock in the morning. I had a really nice conversation with someone who distributes books to Devon. So I was up a little bit late talking about books.
Please, can you just explain to our listeners, please, Carl, why you was up so late? The reason.
So I was... invited to the Nibbies, which are the British Book Awards. They're sort of like the BAFTAs for books. I was shortlisted for 2 awards. The You Are a Champion, the book I co-wrote with Marcus Rashid, was nominated for Best Children's Nonfiction and Best Overall Book of the Year. And I'm pulling a face because I still can't find the words to say this, but we won both.
Two times. You know something? I'm so pleased because I remember right at the outset of that and the conversation we was having about you getting ready to write that and how pleased you were and how nervous you were and how you wanted to, because to understand the pressures that you're gonna go through trying to write that book for that particular individual, what he's achieved, what he's doing, and you fucking nailed it, bro. You nailed it, and you're rightly getting recognized for an awesome book, an awesome, inspiring book. Both of you should get all the flowers in the world.
Thank you.
I had a great chat
with Marcus's mom and sister.
Marcus's
mom, Melanie, said, "You always remember, you know, if you can believe it, you can achieve it." And the point of, I think, what all of us do in our creative space is we're just trying to help more people believe it, right?
Yes, bro.
You write that book, you do that article, you interview that athlete, and you basically say, you believed it, you achieved it. What's the advice you can give to the next generation? What's the stuff you want to give to the next people? And I think that's great. I absolutely love it when Maora is interviewing any athlete, and there's always a bit, maybe like 5 minutes in, and you can just see the athlete start smiling.
Yes.
They can't help themselves because, like, this is a good conversation.
Yes.
I'm like, he's gone.
Great stuff. What's happening, Moyes?
I'm good, man. It's good to be back, man. I've missed you guys.
We missed you, bro. But you got the ute, man, bro.
Yeah, man. It's been good. This morning was... kids are funny, man. They do something to you, don't they?
Honestly.
Man, are you auditioning to be like Jack Bauer? Your 24 hours.
Oi! Was-
Insane. They finished there.
Yeah, your setup was wild.
You finished there in the morning.
I wanted to know, like, how is your setup working?
North London.
North London, then, yeah, office.
Yes.
Champions League final the night before.
It was amazing. So obviously Friday is brilliant because I went and done Champions League women's final with DAZN, and I left on the Friday. So we got there and it was all just fantastic. So many things going on. Unbelievable people walking in and around airport. I had an unbelievable, lovely chat with Gaishka Mendieta, who was there. So then you've done that. Then you have the meetings. Then you go to it. Then you wake up in the morning, you go to the game. And I got to say, you know, the game was amazing, what I thought it would be. Went through the game, blah, 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 everything. Then you leave. I had to literally leave like half an hour after that because I had to go to Milan to get the flight back. And then once we got back, the flight back to London, then I had to go down to Arsenal because the Wall of Doubt, which I'm doing, is about, you know, share your doubts because, you know, with a young person who's going through an unbelievable amount of doubts at the moment. So you share your doubt with a young person, hopefully help them to overcome theirs. So I've done that campaign. Then I got back in the car, then drove to Manchester to get to do Match of the Day. And then done Match of the Day, unbelievable Match of the Day. What a great day it was for football. And then, you know what I mean? I left there at 12 in the night and then drove home, got home at 3:30 in the morning. It was, and you know what? If I could have chosen a 24 hours, I don't think I could have chosen it better than what I had to do in there, because every single thing I'd done in that kind of 24 hours, Carl, you know, was so worth it. The Women's Champions League final was amazing from start to finish. It was like the matchup with the two teams, you know, Lyon being the dominant force, Barcelona coming in now with all their justified hype, like I said, coming into a game where they're now trying, fellas, to actually say, right, we've been so dominant and we're, you know, this is us. Because when Barcelona came, right, I saw when Barcelona's coach came, they came with music, they walked off, they looked amazing, the confidence was exuding out of them. And this is something else with football, what you can never, ever judge. There's nothing that me looking at them with all the experience I've had, looking at football players, watching them when they're coming to playing a game, I could never have thought that they would have started a game with a kind of pressure. They kind of cracked under it, guys. They cracked under it, and Lyon were amazing in the pressure and their game plan. Unbelievable.
There was an amazing description from my friend Kim on Twitter that said Barcelona rocked up to the Champions League final thinking it was going to be a football game, and Lyon turned it into a hockey fight, which I think, you know, the two big moments this weekend, Lyon beating Barcelona, those ridiculous 5 minutes with Manchester City and Aston Villa.
Yes.
They're both really interesting examples of what happens when a team that is previously all conquering and one of those teams that just has the ball and just don't get flustered, finally get flustered.
Yes.
And that third goal Lyon scored. I mean, the first goal, okay, won the goal. Happens.
Yes.
Second goal, you know, Ada, same. Amazing movement. Beautiful. Feels off.
Yeah. Beautiful 1-2.
But it's bam, that third goal cross. Where Barca just cannot get out of the press.
Full court press.
This is like, it. Like, aggression.
Yeah. And you know what I was going to... And you know the thing with that, Carl, is that what I was trying to explain, things like they're not getting the kind of pressure in their own league and in certain games leading up to the Champions League, where when they lose the ball and a team is in their face to the extent that Lyon was, they literally didn't know what to do. And then that last goal looked kind of chaotic from their point of view, but Lyon had the plan. When we spoke to Ada Egerberg after, she said they wanted to keep them under pressure. They wanted to see them, guys, what they would be like with the kind of pressure that they're going to try and put on them for the whole game. And it was when you watch it, and like you're saying, rightly saying, to watch teams that are so dominant just all of a sudden lose it like that was amazing. Obviously, Man City found it, but Barcelona couldn't get it back.
But do you know what I loved through all of this in both examples, which is really telling, is it was two examples of teams, if you talk about Man City and Lyon, that in moments of difficulty, they have to pause and say, do not forget who you are. We are the best of the best. With Man City, it was a thing where for the first time ever, you saw them flustered trying to play long ball. Then out of nowhere, it said, hold on. This isn't right. We do, five goals in 3 minutes. You bring on Gundo, who won the league for you last season, and said, listen, back to basics. We are the best and no one can talk for us. What I loved about Ada was before 20 months out, she was injured. 20 months.
Yeah.
There was all this talk about who the best in the world and everything. And she came and there was a lot of stick talk before. And he was like, listen, we can be as confident as we want. I'm coming back for my place as number one player in the world. And we are going to prove to you that our Champions League heritage and who we are is deserving. Yes. And they did that from, it wasn't even from minute one, from before the game. They were just up for it. It was just that, listen, you guys have been nice, but we are nicer than
you. And they were so respectful to them as well, sure, Mayo.
Yeah.
So respectful to them for what they've done. But I think that it's a stark reminder to Barcelona, because people are saying, I'm watching Barcelona and I'm watching, obviously, watching Leon over there celebrating and watching the Barcelona players, kind of, they were standing a little bit scattered, because I think that they were bewildered for a team that, when they scored 146 goals, I think they conceded 8 up until that point, right? All of a sudden, they've been put in a situation where they've been pressured all the way through. Pateas was still fantastic with some of the stuff she'd done, scored her goal. But the pressure they put on her, we hadn't seen it nowhere, no time before. And I believe that Barcelona players, when I was watching them, the questions, guys, that must have been going through their heads is, what's going on? What happened? What's just happened? And people are saying, oh, they'll come back stronger. Remember how dominant they've been. They've final. And let's face it, guys, for that first half got absolutely owned by Leon. So now they've got to what? They've got to do all this, get to a final and win it to kind of alleviate this and put this in its place in history for them to keep going. And I think that's going to be tough, especially when you listened to Alexia Putellas' interview afterwards, because I got kind of cooked for saying their league don't give them enough stress and pressure for them to be able to deal with this kind of pressure, because I think the French league is getting stronger. That's why Leon, you know what I mean, it's taking them their time to get themselves back. She said it, Putellas said, we need that.
One of my favourite football people on Twitter, all of her reading, is Grace Robinson at Grace on Football, and she once wrote this amazing thing on the Bundesliga tax. And she said, the Bundesliga tax isn't necessary. And she argued that the Bundesliga tax isn't necessarily about quality in like strength, right? But what it might be is just tactical variance. So if you look at the Bundesliga, most teams defend middle block, counter-pressing. Everyone basically tries to play the same style of football. And then the Premier League, you can play Burnley one weekend,
and
then you might have to play Southampton the next weekend, and then you might have to play Chelsea the weekend after. And that's three very different styles of football. And I think this is what you're seeing with Barcelona, in they are very brilliant in their league at playing one kind of football. And it's remarkable, right? And I still can't forget what they did to Chelsea in the Champions League final not too long ago. They're amazing out wide. They've just got just amazing quick switches and rotations in central midfield, and then they've just got amazing finishing. And you could see it in the second half against Leon, that they were still trying to play same way against Leon. Leon was like, well, we know how to defend against this. We've been doing this for ages, so we're going to just pack strong in the middle, and then when you try and spin out wide, we're just going to press you.
Unbelievable.
You know, Wendy Renard was incredible on Saturday.
Supreme.
Just immediately bolting out of the back line on the halfway line. And Barcelona just haven't had to deal with a centre-back that can win all of their 1v1s on the halfway line like that. And that's why Leon now have 8 Champions Leagues.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous. Eight of them.
It's insane. And it's just that dominance. And we talk about the greatest teams ever when we talk about sports and everything. And this is where football is so interesting, because when it comes to greatness, there's always another level. If you win a trophy, it's like, can you do back-to-back? If you win just one trophy, it's like, can you do a treble? Can you do a quadruple? There's always, and it always comes down to fine margins. Like Chelsea last year were at the cusp of greatness and they meet a superior team who wiped them. Barcelona this year, you do everything right, get to Champions League final, heritage does its thing. There's so many of these small moments. Look at the Premier League. Liverpool have lost 2 leagues by 1 point. There's always another level, and it always comes down to the small margin, but it's about, in those moments, what can you do to make sure you get across the line? And I think that's where teams like Barcelona where it's all down to philosophy, it's very difficult because you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Even if we talk about their league and everything, that's great. But for them, it's always been, this is who we are, this is our identity, and we will stick by it. And it's very difficult when your identity, you look yourself in the mirror and you go, hold on, I don't know that guy I'm looking at. Because that's what happened for the third goal.
I think that's what Pateta's done.
Yeah, that's what happened for the third goal. It was like, oh.
Pass heart the back.
Yeah, yeah. This is swallowed up. I don't like this anymore. How do we
do
change
that hand again? It was like, you know, I was thinking, well, I would expect, right? I would expect Leon to start like this.
Mm-hmm.
But then,
but to
you
sustain
know, watching.
It.
Yeah, to sustain then, it was also interesting. You don't...
That's the thing. That's what I was thinking. Barcelona would have probably thought that. But I tell you what would have surprised them more than anything else is the way that they closed them down. Then Henri, the way she smashed into Pateas, won the ball. And not only did she take it off the best player in the world, but then, oh, I know I'm meant to be doing this holding kind of play, but no, nah, man, I'm going to hit this from 30 yards. That shocked the life out of Barcelona. It shocked them. And if I'm going to be totally honest, even after the second goal, I'm thinking, oh my God, they must be having like visions of 2019, right? And then I'm thinking they need to score soon. When it's 3-0, and then I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is horrible. But then they score their goal, but then they created two chances.
Oh, the crossbar.
The crossbar. Yes. Yeah, but the one off the crossbar, but before, they had the kind of chances that even as well as Leon played and how well they... Barcelona, being more ruthless with their finishing, probably get back into that game. Maybe it just wasn't for them, but they missed great chances.
It turns into you're fighting... I know we've been doing the comparison with City. With City, they managed to get those 3 goals in 5 minutes. Like, oh my gosh. But they're playing a side that is of less quality. Like, let's call a spade a spade. Yeah. And that's why, for some, if we look at it, would they be able to do that against Madrid? No. So once you go to 3 goals down, you're now thinking, oh my gosh, I have to get these 3 goals back and I'm playing against some of the best players in the world. That chance you normally take where you're so relaxed, you're tense.
You're snatching.
It becomes a different proposition.
There's this brilliant, I think it's from Star Trek. It's the idea that you think you're winning at chess and then all of a sudden you're losing at poker. Like, wait, what?
I hear you.
It's not so much the strategy, it's that fine margin, that 1%, that extra bit of thinking. And I remember Thomas Tuchel before the men's Champions League final against Man City, he said, you got, Champions League final, you got to bear in mind all these players are physically exhausted and the emotion is so high within them that you don't want to overload them with too much information. Mm-hmm. You want to go out there and give them a system that they are really familiar with. And then you hope that the emotional content of that game will carry them through. Yeah. And then City didn't do well because essentially Pep changed things.
Of course he does.
And you could see some of these missed chances from Barcelona are that half second where some of the best players in the world who just have not flopped all season are thinking before they take the shot.
Right.
Or maybe thinking is probably not the best way. The things they would do subconsciously. They're pausing.
Become second thought. Yeah,
just that half.
Yeah, but then what happens while you're playing? While you're playing in a game. If you're, especially in the first half, they went in 3-1, but then you come out.
Mm-hmm.
You go and you're sitting that for 15 minutes, and you're thinking to yourself, if you're Barcelona players, what's just happened? We've got to get ourselves going. They needed to score in the first 5-10 minutes of the second half to make that to really make it comfortable. But the fact is, they're probably sitting there thinking, we have to get back in this game. We have to score. We have to. That brings pressure. As a player, that is exactly like you said. Instead of just doing it naturally, like they've been doing all season so easily, because it's been so easy, all of a sudden we're seeing the so-called great players, and I still believe they're great players, but now they've got a different test in their head because the pressure's different. This is somebody like, we have to say with Pateta, she delivered. She was marked very tightly. You could see her getting frustrated. She's still done her little bits. She got in like and scored her goal. But her interview after the game was the interview of somebody that seems to be having a lot of questions in her head right now. A lot of questions in her head because the season they've had, it was nearly perfect. And they've fallen at the last hurdle and they're probably asking themselves why. And I don't think it's anything to do with them. I think it's more to do with the fact that they're not getting the kind of, the opposition that need for them to suffer in games where they have to fight back. Like we've seen Manchester City. Manchester City were suffering in that game. And when I watched it, I'm thinking, okay, here we go, because you could feel it in, you could feel it on the pitch and you could feel it in the stands. You could feel the Villa players' chests getting bigger, and then you could feel the Man City players thinking, oh my God, who's going to help us? Where's Kevin? Where's Kevin? And especially, I think, the second Gundogan goal. You look at the setup of Villa, who were doing unbelievably defensively in that game. And then it just come down to, especially for the Gundogan second goal, like Douglas Luiz and Jacob Ramsey, the ball goes to, I think it might have been Cancelo, and he kind of cuts it back in. But what happens is, in fact, it was Cancelo who plays it straight through, and then Tyrone Mings goes to cut it out, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And Douglas Luiz should have cut that space off. He should have cut that ball off, because it came from about all the way along the floor, this ball. This pass came from about 20 yards away along the ground. And then you look at Jacob Ramsey, and it was, yeah, Douglas Luiz, who got drawn towards Kevin De Bruyne, who was on the right, and left the massive space that they were trying to play into Jesus. And then, again, that mistake from Douglas Luiz, Stevie Gerrard looks at that. He says, why have you come across? Stay and stop that pass. And then you look at the from an England international in Tyrone Mings, touch with the amount of space that he had, even if you do have a bad touch, you should still be able to get it. It was so bad that Kevin De Bruyne, who was behind them two, was able to come in, pass the ball down to the right, they cross it, Gundogan scores. And what that said to me was, and exactly like you said at the start there, Mayowa, all of a sudden, we have to play how we play. This is how we play. Because if we carry on trying to play differently and going long and doing different things, we are going to get beat. It just goes down to the margins, man. Liverpool have lost the league for me. And if we're going to really go down to fine, like, the minutiae of how close Liverpool came to winning the league, and it was down to, I'm just going to say, Douglas Luiz goes in that space, then they can't pass it in there. And if it doesn't go, and if Tyrone Mings has a better touch, they don't get that goal for me. They might, you know, I'm not saying, okay, I'm really going deep on that one, but I'm saying if they were able to focus on that, you can put it down to those two things and saying, Liverpool could have won the league if they were a little bit tighter in those situations. Do you understand what I'm trying to say there?
I think it's ridiculous. You consider this is a 38 game season.
And it could come down to that.
And the Premier League was decided on a centre-back having a bad touch, thinking too much in a certain moment, and Douglas Luiz basically getting sucked into thinking about one amazing talented player, forgetting the other one. And it's that small. And it's the, that final day.
Oh, come on, man. It's amazing. There was a time while...
Mara, how did you watch your one? Because I want to know your setup.
So this is where it was really funny. So before that, I was going to say, based on what we're talking about, closing the Women's Champions League final, and linking into this, right? When you were playing, did you ever have a moment where you saw like an amazing goal and you thought, oh my God, we're screwed? Because for me, that Henry goal in the Champions League final, if you can see that Champions League final, you're thinking, you know what? Okay, we're not winning today. That Coutinho goal, when that goes in, you're thinking, okay, you know what?
Honestly, and the way he eyes Ederson
is raps.
It was, he eyes it. But like you do, you see that goal, like you're right. When Henry scores that goal against Barcelona, you're feeling, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. But then when you've already scored, and again, you know, you could go down to the fine details and the small margins. But Ollie Watkins has a chance in that game that probably could have made it 3-0. Oh my gosh, how have you missed that chance? When it went to two, you're thinking, oh my gosh, City, you've blown it. Because I know for a fact Liverpool are going to beat Wolves. I know the goals are coming. But like, honestly, I wanted Liverpool to score and go into the place where they were winning.
Yeah. Because the all they of were, that, they were never actually winning. So it's funny because, Carl, you asked me how I watched it. So I was at the Chelsea game.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And it was a nothing game, really. It was Mike Dean's final game. So that was interesting. But the Watford fans are relegated. They're relegated. So they're just singing funny songs and everything. I'm just there basically to see Rüdiger say goodbye to, you know, a cult hero. But there was a moment in the game where, you know, sort of old school Premier League years, like the text messages are coming through, so-and-so scored, this has happened. And it was a weird moment where the whole stadium, including Watford fans, were singing, City, City, City. And I thought, hold on, what is going on here? Then I realised we lost in two cup finals.
Oh, of course. Sense. Well, back of course. In
them. But there was a moment in the game where even the players weren't concentrating. And I kid you not, there was a sloppy pass and everything because the stadium had affected them. Then Dan Gosling scores for Watford. I didn't even know he was on loan at Watford. I didn't even, like, where have you been? Why are you?
This is what I get when I look at Watford team sheets sometimes. I'm like, wait, where did you come from? Who's that? They've always got something special.
But that's
always something special, always something surprising, that these Watford team sheets.
But that was how weird it was, in the sense that there was so much information coming in that it affected the players on the pitch, that there's lapses in concentration. Yeah. And then they were like, oh yes, you know, City are going to win it. Great. Oh, we've conceded. Oh, let's score a goal. Let's make sure the fans are angry at the end of the season. Barkley scores in his 100th game. Really weird. But just being there and just kind of getting these messages in, and then you're looking at the table and you're like, hold on. So you're telling me in all of this, the table hasn't... What? And then you see Salah scores, and then in your head, you start drawing up scenarios. You're like, okay, if Salah scores, he gets golden boot, he wins them the title. Oh my gosh, the Premier League scriptwriters are going overtime.
I remember we used...
It doesn't happen. But for me, the key part of all of it, Leeds and Burnley, they would have really thought they were out of it.
I'm devastated for Burnley, because it seems to have gone so wrong there in the last couple of years with what's going on with ownership. And again, a club that was, they're kind of debt-free, and now they're layered with debt. Now they got rid of their manager, who's done unbelievable for them. You know what I mean? They're probably going to lose a load of players. They're going to have to pay back this debt. You know, they're downgrading their academy. You know, we're talking about Burnley, and with all due respect, it's going to be difficult enough for them to attract. It really does look like this relegation could cost them so dearly with the decisions they've made this season, with the manager and everything what's going on. I think that this is going to... It's going to be a tough one for Burnley. I see a long, hard road for Burnley.
Yeah.
They're the last of the dying breed, aren't they? Like,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
in terms of stiff football,
you know, Stoke left. They've got a lot of critics, and they're, you know, I think there's, I'm not going to pretend that they're at time that I've been happy having Burnley away, regardless of what football club. I'm like, this is long, this is annoying. But, and I'm sure there's many listeners to this podcast that also are probably a little bit happy that Burnley isn't in the Premier League right now. But I think, one, Sean Dyche is an amazing manager, right? I think we've talked about this a lot, but that Sean Dyche and Diego Simeone aren't too dissimilar in how they want to play football.
Amazing.
In that, you know, they don't mind sacrificing a bit of attacking talent for just like rigid solidity in the middle. So I think that's amazing. Also, by all accounts, Dyche is a really nice bloke. On a good day, you know, obviously he can be a bit stern. I'll tell you right now, out of all the Premier League managers I've met, I've never seen a man as happy as Sean Dyche when Burnley win. He comes in and he's so happy. He's like, you right, lads? That was fun, innit? Long pass. Not a long ball, a long pass is what he told. I remember he said that once. I was like, you got jokes today. He loved it, which is fun. And then you think-
Is that his vibe?
Yeah, they're not going to be in the league anymore.
Right, I really wonder what deeply happened with that car. What happened? What would make you, as a boss or owner, whatever, come in with a man like Sean Dyche, who's not been backed as well as anyone who's doing as well as he's doing with a club of the stature of Burnley? He's nowhere near being backed like he should. And what happened in somebody's mind, somebody's head, what say, listen, what we're doing, I don't think he could take us forward. Somebody who's not been backed. What? And he stayed there. What more could he do? What makes you think to yourself, you know what? I think the best thing for us to do in this moment, while we're kind of sinking we're dropping out of this league, is to sack Sean Dyche.
Now, is it as ridiculous as what Leeds did in removing Bielsa? Right? Both of these clubs get to a point where they've got famous managers that have got them to the promised land and have basically fundamentally transformed the club, not only in the first team, but the academy level, and completely changed what that club was possible. And both of them get to a point this season where they ain't cutting it out. They ain't doing it no more. And
The injuries are piling up. Yeah, okay, they haven't been backed in the transfer market or whatnot, but it's probably got to the point where the players aren't listening to the manager as well as what they used to be. And Leeds went, we're going to have to do it. We're going to have to bite the bullet and get rid of him. And Burnley did that a bit later. And it's, and it, again, fine margins, right?
Mm.
One club did it and one club didn't. And in the end of it, it was what? It came down to a red card, a penalty, and Newcastle getting better.
Leeds is bored. They were lucky in the end. They're lucky that Rafinha, you know, especially in the last five, six games that I've seen him, he turned up in that game and we saw him do his knee walk across the pitch in, you know what I mean? His, that was his penance, I suppose, for God giving him what he prayed for.
Yeah.
But like I said it on Match of the Day, that board have a massive sigh of relief to actually breathe simply because of the way that they've gone about their business. If they were going to get rid of Bielsa, a man who, like I said, he brought a championship side into the Premier League and he was duking it out in a style that he wanted to duke it out. And who knows if they gave him the kind of players that he could have continued trying to build the way he played. Better players playing the system that he wanted to play. Okay, they didn't do it. He was trying with these players. They couldn't do it. Now, I believe they either should get rid of him earlier or, you know, give him a chance to try and get out of it at least. But they sacked him. Okay, they made the decision to sack him. You know what I mean? After not really backing him. And then I think the injuries that they have, you can't blame anyone for that. That's just what happens. And then they sack him. They bring in Jesse Marsh. And then in the end, they scrape by. But like the board have to take a lot of the flack. Because if they start the season and they haven't made some signings to help Jesse Marsh.
You think about that Leeds team, the Leeds team that finished top half last season and the spine of that team. That team, that's the spine of that team. So, you know, Bamford, Phillips, whatnot.
Cooper.
Those players were not fit enough to play together until March.
Yeah.
This season. And Bielsa, obviously, you know, he loves his murder ball and he loves his really rigorous, intensive training sessions. And I suppose, you know, for Leeds, I guess they went, you are overworking these players at a time where you cannot overwork these players. You can't keep, you know, risking muscular injuries in the training ground when we barely have enough players. You just need to go for it. So there are so many clubs now. I think if you look at it, Leeds now probably have a really, really important summer window for new season. Manchester United, huge window. Southampton, huge window.
Chelsea
Arsenal. Huge window. Arsenal huge
Tottenham.
Window.
Tottenham. Look at a team and you think, okay, City have just got Haaland. Liverpool are going to need to maybe do something.
Surgical summer for them.
Yeah.
Everybody has to do something, but I don't. It's how much. I think Leeds need a load of work. Arsenal, I think, key signings. I don't think we can afford to make the kind of that we're going to spend the kind of monies where somebody comes in and we hope. I don't think we could do that now. We need to buy a goer. I'm not saying Luis Diaz, but I'm talking Luis Diaz kind of energy. Has to come in, the ground running. That's what they need to do. The recruitment, which has been very good. I have to give Edu his due with what he's got up to this point, been good, but they need some experience and they need some players who are fucking ready to go.
I'm going
to
ask you this now. You finished fifth. You're in that tight space where you want to be in the Champions League, but also in the Europa League. So would you prefer to build your squad so you have enough players that can make a long run in the Europa League? Or would you be happier with two or three like blue chip players to just get yourself into top four?
I'd rather get the players that can have a season where we go deep in the Europa League. And stay, obviously, in and around between the fourth and that. Because then I know that they're going to get something out of that journey. And then, if they do win that, then we're in the Champions League. And then you can attract that player. So that's the journey I would like them to have. I'd like them to have that journey where we're in the Europa League and we go deep. Semi-finals, final, that kind of win it. That's because if we're in it, that's what we should be trying to do is win it. Shouldn't be using it just to... you know, like blood players. We need to win that tournament. Like when Mourinho with Man United, you're in there, you win it, you get back in. Because we need to get back in. But it was, you know, this season would have been for me very, it would have been a year too early, you know? You know when people say things like people come up from the championship and they said, yeah, they came up maybe too early for themselves. I believe that the work what they would have had to do if we went up would have been really, really tough and a lot of pressure because they're trying to get that player to stay in the Champions League places and that. But I think if we can get those players for Europa League to go with what we've got and have a really good season and hopefully win it. We should be trying to win it for me and then get back in the Champions League. Then you can attract that other player then with a season, like with a season in lieu.
I like that description because you basically want to use the Europa League to teach the players how to win games.
Yes.
And how to win those fine margin moments,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, Carl. So you want them to have that year because the year they've just had, they will have, if they're intelligent players and understand and ambitious, they'll learn from the latter stages of this season especially and the start of the season because the pressure that the Arsenal players, the youngest team in the league, were under at the start of the season. Remember, they were bottom of the league. And then to get that back, Mikel, change the whole culture of it, get the fans back on board. You know what I mean? There's no noise upstairs. It's all football. We had a decent run. Like I keep saying, we flew a bit too close to the sun. We were a bit Icarus. We came back to Earth. But the fact is, the journey should have taught them something mentally, what it means. Because when you look at what City have to do, and yes, City got money to buy the players. But the same thing with the mentality. It's a mentality thing. Liverpool's mentality. Nowhere near the money what City have got.
Mm-hmm.
For Liverpool to be hanging on to City's coattails is a miracle with the resources that City have got. They've taken Sterling, Gundogan and Zinchenko off the bench, for Christ. And they left £100 million Jack Grealish on the bench. People talk about, everybody says about the money. Yes, he's managing that team because they're an unbelievable squad of players, but he's got the capability of doing that. You know, whereas Liverpool, they don't. They have to make sure that they go wisely in the transfer market. At the same time with us and what Edu and Mikel's doing, I think I think we're in the right place.
Whilst we're here, I think it's a really good time to cast our minds back and I want to give props to a team and a certain gentleman because we mentioned Arsenal there and, you know, just missing out on top four. We mentioned Spurs as well. But there was one man, one team that caused chaos in North London on back-to-back weekends. Back-to-back weekends.
Brighton, bro.
Big Potter.
Went to North London. Big Potter. Went to North London. Back-to-back weekends.
Oh, my God.
L for you. L Jesus. For you. Now figure out who's going to get Champions League.
You know, when you look, and again, Mayo, the chances.
Nine.
They were able to finish off the chances. We saw the second goal they scored. Pascal Gross. Right, was the kind of goal that they've been making that kind of chance since Brighton have been here, but they haven't got that striker what scores the goal, what gives them the capability of sitting back a bit, playing and just maybe nicking another one or just managing the game. They just don't take chances. And they've still finished ninth.
They lost five games on the bounce.
Yeah.
They didn't score a goal at home for like four months.
Remember when he had to do that? Remember when he had to address the fans?
After the Leeds
game.
And
say, whoa. We need to look at our history a bit here and see, you know, these fans are kind of forgetting the history of what's going on recently. He had to just like pull them up a bit and they had to take that on board. They had to swallow that because he's right.
Do you know I have to give them flowers though, right? Because after that five game loss, especially at that point in the season where a team like them who typically finish 15th, 16th, I think there's a season where they finished 13th, it gets to a point where it's like, we're not going to get relegated.
Mm.
You kind of go into, I call it a beefer mode, where you start, you know, calling your assistant, can you see if the Villa's available? You want to watch this for the boys and everything. You know, that part of the season, but they've been unbeaten since that five game, they've been unbeaten. They've won like five or six of those games. They beat United 4-0.
I was there.
Went to
So one thing that I always think of, last season, Graham Potter did an interview with the BBC. Graham Potter did an interview with the BBC and he said, if you look at the Premier League, 85% of the league position is decided before a ball is kicked. He goes, before each season, 85% of the league table is done. He goes, you know it's going to be competing for the Champions League. You know it's going to be competing for relegation.
Yeah.
But he says, that extra 15%, that's where I have to work.
Wow.
He goes, that 15% is where you have to be smarter. You have to think, you have to be intelligent. You have to be hopeful. You've got to be fit. And he goes, we just have to work in that 15% of hope. And I asked him about this again after the United game. I basically just went, how did you do that to Manchester United? And he said, well, I think it's the same thing. You've got to just make sure everyone at your football club is aligned on a vision. And then you make sure you make good decisions constantly and you remember your process. And he said, this Brighton team's good, but for where Brighton want to be, not everyone at Brighton's going to be there for that journey. He says some of those players are going to be too good and will need to be and will be bought by other players. He said, and he also gave the impression that some of the players, he goes, we have to get good at buying them. We also have to get good at selling them. Because he went, he basically admitted there are also going to be times where some players who might have been there
are going to have
for 2 or 3 seasons will get to a point where you're like, okay, well, we want to now start competing for 7th and 8th, and you might not be that player, so we're going to have to move you on as well. And it's just that thing of, there are some clubs in this league that have money and that's how they solve their problem. And there are some clubs in this league that don't have money and that's why they've got problems. And Potter is amazing in that they don't necessarily have the money, but they go, okay, what do we have? And how are we going to solve that problem afterwards? And that's why I put L's on the North London clubs. That's why I put L's on West Ham.
You know, honestly, you look at it, the club, the owner, brilliant. The manager, brilliant. The stadium. And you know, once he got them back on board, the Brighton fans, really good, really nice. The stadium with the capability to go again if they were able to build on, if they want to. But with that manager, you're talking about players may think, you know what, we've stayed for a little while, we've been here for a few years now and kind of not moving quick enough. He's a manager. Remember when he signed the contract and it was like 6 years out of nowhere? Because they see the picture. They want him to get into the journey, what he's doing. I would love to see Graham Potter in Europe because he's got European experience. I'd love to see him with a team in Europe. I think that he's probably going to want to do at some stage. You know, so if he can get the players at Brighton and he could see the Brighton team that are taking the chances, you know, because they defend brilliantly. Their midfield is always a midfield that's got the capability of sniffing out with Bissouma, creation with Pascal Gross, and these players who can get the ball forward.
I think what's the brilliant thing about Brighton is they were always going to have chances. Like Graham Potter's like, okay, so some of you aren't, you know, none of my strikers are clinical, but that doesn't mean I'm going to stop finding a way to get you chances on a plate. Some of these, that's amazing coaching.
It's about finding the right player. And of course, they've got Dennis Undav coming back and he smashed it in the Belgium league. It reminds me a little bit of when Emmanuel Dennis was out there smashing it. Yes. And it's about how easy is it to translate into the Premier League? Like he's shown that he can score goals. He's got like 20 plus goals, 10 plus assists. And in that sort of Brighton system where there's loads of chance creation, it's just about being able to put the ball in the back of the net. It sounds so simple, but we're talking about the top level, the top level. I think he could be good. I feel like ultimately Brighton's like scouting. It's like a football manager foul save. They find the best young talent ever. Like Cucurella was an absolute steal.
What
I don't know how
find.
Every Jesus. Other team did not make that move after the European Championships.
Gosh, he's good.
Fantastic, good. fantastic. So I feel like this could finally be the one that could slot in at a good age as well. I believe he's 25 and do it. But I do feel that they do need that experience as well. It's great to have that one that's, you know, fairly new to the league. But if you can have that experience striker, because that's what they had in Glenn Murray. Like, I know it's a different time, but Glenn Murray for each season would give you 10 goals guaranteed. He would get your 10 goals guaranteed. You wouldn't have to think about it. He's going to get your goals. And they need a guaranteed goal scorer. Maupay does well, but you're never sure if it's going to be high or low with him. And that's the problem.
Ian, I want to ask something you mentioned in the match of the day where it was you, Gary, Alan, and you were talking about the golden boot. And I think Gary said, would you be happy with 23 goals golden in your season? You're like, you did a little joke. And Gary asked, why do you think strikers are able to win golden boots with 23? And you said, you know, it's different. They play one up top. And it goes, that inverted winger thing. And then it moved on. What is the inverted winger thing?
You see, like how, I think like when we were playing Salah, the way Mane plays on the width, the wide, what's his, Mahrez, that kind of player. Those players who are scoring, those are Sterling. You know, those kind of players are the ones who are scoring the goals. Son, those kind of players who, if when we were playing, Sonny, Sterling, Mahrez, left winger. You know, I see Sonny probably be a right winger. Sterling would be a right winger. Mahrez would be a left winger. Mo Salah would be kind of a left winger. So the way it's happened now, where they don't have, like when we were playing two up front, or even after that, then two up front with Dennis coming inside as the number 10. You know, it wasn't like how it was. Like Thierry, kind of like, Thierry's probably the person who started that, wasn't he? You know, the winger coming in, doing, but then he went inside as well. But like, I think that with the days of that striker, like Al Shearer scored, because he's up there all the time, and the way you're getting the ball up there, it's in the box all the time. It's different the way they're playing now. You know, the forward has to come off. You have to go in behind. You know, then it just comes down to how hungry and how clinical the winger is, like the inverted winger is, because we've seen Mo Salah's on a regular basis, another 20 goals this season. You know, Son, 20 goals. He's not up the top line like a striker is. And that's where it's different, because I look at how I would play. My game would have to be totally different to play now. I like to do it because, you know, I'm looking at the same kind of stature as Alexander Lacazette. Would have to come in, link the play. I wouldn't want to come as deep as I've seen him come. But like, because I want to be in and around the box, but you want to link the play and get in the box. That's what you want to do. Because that's why I'm interested to see how many goals Erling Haaland scores next season.
When when you play next to inverted winger, does it change the way the crosses come in for you? Would that change your timing?
Go on quick then, man.
You probably don't even get the crosses, because remember back in the day when it was winger, the winger instruction was quote unquote get chalk on
your boots. Yeah.
Like the penalty box was for the striker. Now he has to share it with these other guys. So if you think about them, the chances that striker getting more, it's with everyone else.
Yeah, you're sharing it with like now, like Mane and Salah. You know, they're sharing it out because you don't make the same runs. You don't get to the near post because you know what the winger's going to do. Because I know that we're going to get the ball to the winger and he's going to get it in as soon as he can. Now, you can make a run in the box. The guy will get it and he'll set it back to Trent. Set it back to Reese. So you're having to make different kind of runs. Even the runs that you used to make is kind of different, because they say get in the far post, get in the near post. You could do that as much as you want now. But the game's different because they want to go inside to Trent, who's a right back, who's now gone and joined into the midfield. So then he can then get outside Mo Salah if Mo Salah comes inside. So then you're waiting.
Right.
You're kind of waiting for the ball to get out there so you can make the run call. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's not as frequent, because the system and the way that they're playing now, the striker's got to do a lot of waiting. It's not coming there quick enough. And plus you might be coming deep to link play. It's a different discipline now, being a striker. I think that's why Harry Kane's adapted well to it. I want to see how Haaland adapts to it. It was a Benzema. It's the new age striker now. That's why I don't think you'll see like a Shearer type person scoring those goals like he used to. But we could see it has to be in a team like City, where they're going to be making a shitload of chances to someone who's just there, just tapping them in. You know, and this is why when you see the goals, and we're talking, like, there's one time they won it on 18 goals back in our day. Michael Owen, Dion Dublin, and someone else shared it on 18 goals. Teddy sharing them. And, you know, I mean, that was one of the lowest ever, I think. But 23 now, it's a lot of goals to score in the league. A lot.
So, we're speaking about strikers, but on the team, not more flowers probably, shout-outs. Brentford, absolutely. First season. Yeah,
they have to.
But the return of the 10. Has been so key to that. Christian Eriksen. Oh, come on. Oh, my word.
It's going to be interesting as well with that Mayo. What's going to happen with Christian Eriksen? And if he's going to stay with Brentford, because they gave him the opportunity, they gave him the stage to say, listen, I'm fucking here and I'm back with a bang as well. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. But what he showed is the 10 is here.
Majestic.
To stay. Come on, man.
Majestic. We thought it was over. It's not. That position is still alive.
Christian Eriksen came back and let people know that if you got the right, and if you're playing it right, and they play it too, because when you look at Brentford, guys, There was a time Brentford never spent one day in the bottom three, and there was a time where I'm thinking they're going to get sucked in, right? Little did I know, Christian Eriksen's on the horizon for them. And as soon as he came, Brentford's team went 15 yards up the pitch, because now you've got somebody in the area of the field, the last third, who can keep the ball and keep it going amongst yourselves. So as then you don't get it somewhere. Like we used to see at the start of the season, they'd get it up. Ivan Toney would try and link it. They'd lose it. Bam. So then what happens is that the defensive side of them are nervous about going up and supporting and making sure they don't want to commit too many players. I remember watching them when Eriksen got there. Their team was 10, 15 yards further up and able to then get the ball and pick people out. They've turned it. Ivan Toney, for me, I'm going to put my money on him being right amongst the Golden Boot next season, especially if they keep Eriksen. Because if I'm Thomas Frank, I'm saying to Ivan Toney, I don't want you to do nowhere near as much work you've had to do in the team in the first. Sometimes you're seeing him in the right back and the left back slot. He's going back doing defensive stuff and in play, he's way back. No, he's capable of scoring 20 goals. If he's capable of scoring 20 goals in this league, Ivan Toney. So I'm interested to see what happened.
His penalty technique.
It's amazing. It's beautiful to watch. I love it.
I remember when Chelsea played them and I was going to the game and I was saying to myself, it's going to be so good to see Eriksen. Little did I know that he was going to make me really angry, because just the quality of this person, check over the shoulder, find the pocket of space. It's like just space invading, just delicate touches. Even the goal he scored, just arriving on the ball, slotting it in. You're just thinking, it's so crazy how one player's quality can just bring the best out of everyone else. Everyone suddenly goes, if he's playing to that level, if I'm half of that, the team's better.
Yeah.
It is so good.
Absolutely. But the thing is, he's brought the standards of the team up. Brentford look like a different team. All of the players, like when Dennis came, something happens in you where you say, I've got to fix up my business. Eriksen's given those Brentford players the I've got to fix up my business. They look like a different team. They look better. They look better, you know, and they play a good brand of football, very intense. It's the new rocker. It's a rock and roll there, especially when they're there. You know, they've got, again, you know what? It's him or Graham Potter's got to get flowers this week. Can we give out two bunches? Because they've been magnificent, them two. Magnificent.
I sometimes think about just what the 2022-23 season looks like, right? So we got, there's a World Cup in the middle of it.
Fuck me, yeah.
I know I'm supposed to say this in a smarter way, but what are you doing?
What's going on? What?
You're doing that with the trend. So the Premier League stops for a couple of weeks. Then we come back, we play on Boxing Day, and then you've got the January transfer window.
And then the Champions League as well.
Yeah, you're just like, what are you doing?
This is like, you know, remember the Hudson video there? Let's not take this. that is what it is. You've been prepping for it. You've been doing Jack Bauer already 24 hours.
So yeah, I've done a 24.
You're ready.
I'm doing my
prep. Ready for it.
Well, you know what? Can I be honest before we go, guys? If it's anything like that last 24 hours, the football, I have to say, Leon, massive flowers. I'm probably going to give flowers to Leon with everything what they've done, coming back, getting their crown back. Barcelona, I'm really sorry. You know what I mean? I'm going to give them something because that is a beautiful season they've had. I've got to give them love there as well. But that was a fantastic occasion and they did it proud. If I could have a 24 hours like I had and it came and it manifested in the league, the World Cup, and I'll take it all day. I'll take it all day because a brilliant weekend, you know? But guys, I think that's it. I'm going to have to say goodbye. My missus, I just heard a doorbell. Guys, thank you so much, man.
Good to see you guys, man. Love you guys.
It's so good to see you.
Thank you very much, Karl Anka. Thank you very much, Maya Quadre. Listen, guys, what can I say? Thank you so much for listening this season. I hope it's been worth your while, and make sure you come back again next season. I'm going to be taking a couple of weeks off, in fact, and then I'll be back on for the Women's Euros, because I'm not missing that. So hopefully you guys then. But until then, make sure you stay safe and stay well. Have a well-deserved break, man. and treat yourself to something nice. And I don't just mean like an ice cream or something. Something really nice. So take it easy. Have a great time. God bless.